Hey, well, good afternoon, and thanks for being back here. And Mr. Lanning, thank you so much for being here with us. You probably know the drill quite well anyway, but we'll go through it. We'll ask for you to make an opening statement, and then we'll have questions from the group. And then 5 minutes left in the 45-minute time frame. We'll wrap it up, and you can have a closing statement at that time. So, again, thank you for being here and applying. And do you have any questions before we get going?
No, I think I understand the drill.
So, very good. Well, again, Mayor, it's good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members, and Mr. Mayor. Always a pleasure to be in front of a mayor.
Exactly.
I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be interviewed for a position on the Minnesota Board of Regents. And I want to also thank you for your service. I know this takes a tremendous amount of time on your part as volunteers, and thank you for that. That's what makes the state work, is when people are willing to step up and volunteer. I want you to know that I would be very honored to serve as a member of the board. And the original plan that we had for doing this interview was to do it by phone. And I've done hundreds of phone interviews, interviewing candidates over the years. And I've recognized all along that that's less than ideal for either party. And so I decided to interrupt my winter vacation and fly back up here from Arizona. And I'll be flying back tomorrow to resume that. I won't get out of here soon enough. There are a number of reasons why I decided to follow the advice and recommendation that I had from a number of people to apply for this position. Let me cite the reasons that come to mind. The University of Minnesota, in my view, is a very strong beacon of hope and prosperity for the future of our state, and I want to help make it even stronger. I would like to participate in a bold and ambitious strategic plan as envisioned and articulated by President Kaler, and I'd like to help make it a reality. As a region, I would like to focus on improving the student experience. That's my background, working with students. And expanding leadership education and community engagement. Working with business to meet the workforce needs. And seizing opportunities to make Minnesota a better place in which to live and work. I would also like to elevate the visibility and presence of the University of Minnesota in the 7th Congressional District. And I would like to communicate with leaders throughout the district on behalf of the university. As an example, it would be good for the University of Minnesota to be involved, as I am, with a group called the Valley Prosperity Partnership. This involves North Dakota business leaders and higher education leaders addressing research, workforce, economic development, and water issues in the Red River Basin. I believe that the university's Office of the Vice President for Research and their various components could benefit greatly from participation in this initiative that we have. So I see an opportunity there for the university. Well, I've had a lot of experience other than as an elected official. I spent 6 years on the Morehead City Council, 22 years as mayor, which I think is some kind of a record in Minnesota for a city of our size. But may agree, probably know some other examples. As mayor for the first 6 years anyway, we didn't have a city manager. So in our charter, even with the city manager, says the mayor is chief executive officer. And so I played a key leadership role. During my tenure, we faced a number of challenges. And let me just cite a few examples of the challenges we face. The first had to do with fiscal disparities over against the state of North Dakota. The state of North Dakota is doing very well. And we've obviously had a struggle. We went through a period of time in the late 70s and early 80s where we were losing population. We lost about 3,000 students in our K-12 system. We were losing businesses. We were losing tax base. And so as mayor, I had to come up with a strategy for how do we counteract this, how do we deal with this. And so we went to work on trying to develop a targeted relief to help us. We got help from the state, and we did a lot of marketing and rolled up our sleeves and went to work to try and improve things. And in fact, things have improved greatly. The second challenge we faced was with the economic downturn of the late 70s and early 80s. We were losing revenue. We had a deficit. We were depleting depleted our reserves. And so we had to turn that whole financial situation around. We adopted a policy of requiring reserve funds in all of our different funds. And I also instituted a practice of monitoring critical indicators for the city, so that we could see whenever there was an indicator that showed that the health of the city wasn't quite where it ought to be. And that was very helpful to us in working through that situation. We also had a very outdated management system in the city. When I first got on board, we had 26 department heads, you can imagine, reporting directly to the city council. I was able to get that down to 6, and then I was able to convince the voters to go to a city manager form of government, which we were able to do. We also had the challenge of increasing diversity in our community and metropolitan area, and the tensions that go along with that. You know, we secured a grant from Pew to help us work through and deal with the diversity experience that we were having. And we also established the first human rights commission for the city of Moorhead. And then the last challenge I would mention is the ever-increasing floods. And you've heard all about the flooding problems that we've had up in our part of the state. And we had a lot of work to do in putting in flood mitigation. And the other thing that I went to work on doing was building an international coalition of people from Minnesota, Minnesota, Manitoba to work on flood issues and try to do a better job.
Senator Lanning,
is there anything you can do, Bill? I mean,
cell phones?
Do you have a cell phone in your briefcase that maybe...
Turned it off.
You turned it off. We're getting a lot of...
Put your hand over your mic just to see if it's...
turn it to the side.
Oh,
that's better. It's too close.
Much better.
Margaret, your magic.
Oh,
your
that feels good.
That's nice.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah. That'll help for the people.
You're a problem solver.
Oh, and you're savvy.
You came all that way. We don't want to give you a bad sign.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me say a word about my experience in governance at the state level. Of course, during much of my tenure, we were dealing with a severe economic downturn, and we had budgets from $4 billion to $6 billion, a very difficult kind of situation, trying to reduce spending while protecting critical programs and services, and that was a real challenge that we got through, fortunately, and now things are certainly in much better condition. As chair of the House State Government Finance Committee, we worked to have program funding tied to performance. Are we getting the results that we expect? And that's a trend that the state government is definitely moving in, and a good trend, I believe. We also tried to improve the collection of state taxes due. We found that millions of dollars are not being collected. We had a tax analytics, it's called, to try and collect those taxes, and we were successful in improving about $90 million a year. And also put in place a sunset commission to help evaluate whether things should continue or not, whether they were still doing the job that we had intended. Then I was also chair of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement, and we were facing a situation that we were assuming an 8.5% return on our investments. And in years leading up to that, we weren't even half of that. And so I worked and worked with labor to get in the governor's office to get that reduced. We were able to reduce that expected rate of return. The 8.5 was the highest in the country and really was not prudent. The university has 4.5% goal with regard to its endowment, which is certainly a whole lot more reasonable. As a House author of the stadium bill, we were able to secure bipartisan support for the project that many thought would never happen. And there were days I wondered if it would. And I could write a book about that experience, and I won't say anything more at this point. As a member of the Executive Committee of the Legislative Commission to End Poverty, we spent 4 years studying the issue and making recommendations to help people climb the ladder out of poverty. Now, the insights that I've gained through that experience, I believe that would benefit the university in reaching out to underserved populations, which is a very important goal for the university. Then, with respect to my experience with boards of regents, I worked as chief student affairs officer at Concordia for 32 out of the 39 years I was there. And as chief student affairs officer, I worked regularly with the board and a board committee. And so given this experience, I fully understand the policy making of the role of the board and the leadership and management role of the president. And that, I think, is a very important experience to help in serving as a member of the Minnesota Board of Regents. Now, let me just comment briefly about my leadership style. Throughout my experience, I've been both a leader and a manager. A leader being influencing people to get things done, a manager getting things done through other people. And, in fact, I taught leadership education to our students for many, many years, trying to get them to understand the difference between leadership and management and how that might help them as they assume their careers. I also worked in a bipartisan manner to build coalitions to address and build consensus on major issues at the local, state, regional, and international level. I have probably been one of the most visible leaders in our part of the state, and I have been known for my ability to communicate effectively and with my media relations throughout that region. Those who have known and worked with me would note that I'm a good listener, thoughtful, respectful, and a problem solver. Now, there, I could tell you a lot more about things I've done. If you go to morelanning.com, you'd get more information. But along the way, I also had business experience. I owned 2 retail stores. Another dimension of my experience, and I've served on several community foundation boards, including the Fargo-Moorhead Area Foundation, the West Central Initiative Fund, working with McKnight, and the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund and our local interpretive center. As you can see from that, I have a broad experience in higher education, in local government, in state government, and working as a leader on a regional level. And so I very much appreciate your consideration, and I look forward to responding to your questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Erickson.
Representative Lanning, Mayor Lanning, you and I had an opportunity to talk, and I appreciate that out in the hall a few moments ago. And I raised with you what my particular concern is. I'm but one of 17 people at this table that will be voting on sending it across the way. And I want to say unequivocally to begin with that were there no legislators on the Board of Regents now, it would be my opinion that having at least one former legislator on the Board of Regents would be very beneficial to the board, and you would be clearly the most qualified of those folks that I think could ever come before us and have a chance to serve. So your resume in every regard but one line more than qualifies you to be a wonderful regent. And if my position is not upheld and the legislature elects you, that I don't think that's a fatal flaw. I just believe that one or two legislators is appropriate and helpful. But three or perhaps even four, meaning four out of 12 regions, I think does a disservice to the whole process. That's my view. So I just wanted to let you address that. you certainly can make a case that you have all the qualifications, and I think everyone around the table sees this. But if you would address that, sir, just particularly, and why you, I might be wrong or why that might not be a prudent thing for us to do or the legislature to do.
Well, Jim, I understand and respect that that opinion and that position. And I guess in response, let me say a few things here. First of all, I don't have any axe to grind with the university or with higher education in general. I have no agenda relative to what ought to be done from a legislative point of view. And I would point out that, I've spent three times as much time in local government as I did in the legislature. And I've spent four times as much time in higher education than I did in the legislature. And I think, as I mentioned, our part of the state, I think the university needs to be more visible and have more presence. You may or may not be aware of the fact that NDSU and UND, their presence has grown tremendously. And the public attention is far more drawn to NDSU and UND than it is to the University of Minnesota. And that's something I'd like to see changed, because the University of Minnesota is for Minnesota. And I would like to see us be able to improve our visibility and presence. And given my visibility and connections, I mean, I've worked along the way with people at Crookston, at Morris, people at the university in general. And so I know a lot of the local leaders already throughout the 7th District. And I think that's an advantage. when you know local officials, you know people involved in a lot of things. So I guess that's what I would say in response. Yes, I was a legislator. I'm proud of that, proud of what we did. But that's not the primary thing I bring to the table. I bring to the table a long history of community service to my community, to my region, and in higher education, and that's what I offer.
Thank you.
If I could just follow up.
Yes.
Those are, I agree with those, and those are all very appropriate, so thank you for the chance to do so. But again, I want to say that you have the highest regard of this member and
thank
I think
you.
Others, and thank you for doing this. And I hope that if you are not elected by the legislature, you will continue to find a way to bring those advantages to the university, and we will certainly encourage them to
yes.
make use of those. So thank you in any case.
I would be happy to.
Good. Harriet.
Sure. I have a two-part question. The first, I am looking at your website right now, and I'm not seeing any references to consulting in higher ed. Is that correct?
I'm not actively consulting in higher ed, no.
Okay.
I have not targeted that as okay. an area of activity.
Okay. So you have been, certainly from a legislative standpoint, very involved. But from a direct institutional involvement standpoint, you were last involved in 2005, correct?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about what you have done for your own benefit to remain current with regard to higher ed trends, forecasts, knowledge about the healthcare. The higher ed industry.
Well, I've continued to read materials about higher education and community, and tried to stay up to date. I've made frequent visits to our campus and stay connected with people in higher ed. I've been fortunate to be friends with Clyde Allen, who currently is in that, and we've had many conversations about things that the university is facing, and so I've stayed connected that way. I'm friends with former presidents, a couple of whom are references that I've submitted. And so I've tried to stay connected, at least to some extent, but I haven't been actively working in higher education since I retired.
Thank you.
Okay. Margaret.
Actually, my question is a good follow-up to Harriet's, and your observation about the competition from NDSU is right on. It's not just in western Minnesota. If you look at the western suburbs, nobody is advertising like NDSU.
Yes.
So I accept that. I think you're right on. If you were to be a regent and could recommend something that would help the student experience at the University of Minnesota leap a landing, not take incremental steps, what would that be? What's the big, bold, audacious thought that you would bring to the regents and to the VP of Student Affairs and the staff?
Well, as I mentioned, I think the student experience is critical to the university and to any institution. So you need to find out, have ways of measuring, monitoring how students feel about their experience and what they like, what is maybe missing, and be able to respond to that. And I believe very strongly in higher education preparing leaders, preparing people for leadership. And leadership is the process of influencing other people. And every graduate from the University of Minnesota ought to be out in society influencing their communities, their region, their state, their country. And so what we do to help prepare students for leadership roles, understanding what leadership is, all too often I found in my experience students didn't really understand leadership. They thought you had to be either elected or ordained to be a leader. And so we had a challenge. The challenge was getting them to understand what is leadership and why it's important to them and why it's important to our society. And I would really want to emphasize that experience for the students. And I think it's very important also to for the university to connect with underserved populations. And, you know, I'm well aware of the fact that the ACT level of our incoming students has been rising, which is a good trend. I get concerned about leaving some underserved students out. Finding ways to connect with those students, students who may not show it in their test scores but may have other potential, is important, I think, for us to get at that. One of the things I did at Concordia, which I'm very proud of, is we really beefed up our academic advising and academic counseling services. A lot of times students leave for the wrong reasons because they haven't yet figured out what they want to do, what their goals might be, and they start having trouble and they're not getting the help that they need, and so they transfer out or they drop out of school. I think those support systems are very important to retaining students and to helping students successfully complete the program. So those are a few thoughts.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Sonia.
Mayor, if you became a regent, your role would require lots of intellectual energy and what we've been calling political backbone. Mm-hmm. You would likely be in situations in which you would take a stand that might be challenged, would likely be challenged in a very divisive situation. Will you name one or two experiences beyond what you have said from your career that would prepare you to be successful on behalf of the university in this complex arena? called the Regents?
In terms of getting really engaged in an issue?
Getting engaged and taking a stand and hopefully supporting that stand and then reacting to others who have differing views.
I have a real inquisitive mind. And all the way through school, I had many of my teachers marvel at all the questions I asked. I'm very good at asking questions and probing questions challenging people in a respectful sort of way. I think anybody who has worked with me, even working with somebody that may disagree with me, I've done it in a respectful way and yet challenge people. And I have had many experiences both in my local government and state level where I've had to accept a lot of criticism from folks who don't like what we're doing or want us to do something differently. And I've got a thick skin.
So would you give an example of how that might have played out in a very specific situation?
Well, it certainly was true with regard to the stadium issue. Very definitely true there.
Divisive.
And I mean, I could show you some of the letters I got. I got letters from people who wanted me to be in a car accident or wanted me to meet my demise. I never let that get to me. I can cite the example, too, of the work I've done in water management, with flooding being the issue it is. And we're as concerned about water supply and drought as we are about flooding. I started working on this back in the mid-70s, trying to get the whole basin to work together to solve these problems. And I met all kinds of resistance along the way, people who saw me trying to set up another layer of government, somebody else to tell them what to do or not to do when it came to their individual. And we've persevered. And the organization I started, the international organization I started back in 1979, is still going strong today. And it is because, we had the vision. Talked about the vision, what the vision was, and coached people along the way on how we could overcome those difficulties, and so I think that's a good example of my style. A very difficult thing, controversial, and yet we've been able to make it happen.
Thank you.
Very good, Lois.
Mr. Mayor and Representative and citizen. You have a life experience that makes you and three other people in this room unique, and that's the phenomenally broad and equally deep learning that you get by serving in the legislature. You also have experience in water issues, as you just referenced, that matter drought-wise in your neck of the woods, mm-hmm. because you can't put any kind of economic development facility someplace where there isn't enough water.
Right.
And you also know that you're not only in a river basin, you're on an I-29 corridor, and that you can multiple X that water issue when you move south. Mm-hmm. You have spoken to a message that I sent to Mr. Brunix a decade ago, and that's that the University of Minnesota has come exceptionally close to ceding the western part of Minnesota to North and South Dakota. And you know that the university, by virtue of your knowledge from the legislature, you know many, many things about what it brings to bear.
Right.
As a mayor, you are informed in spades sitting next to Fargo, and as a Regional Economic Development Board member, you are exceptionally informed on what it takes to keep communities and regions alive economically.
Right.
Share with us, if you would please, some insight on how the University of Minnesota land grant economic driver of this state can play in the greater Minnesota arena to drive economies.
Well, the one suggestion I made, this initiative that just started a year ago, in fact, one of my references was the guy who started it, Bill Marcille. I think you know Bill. He is the chairman of the board, I should say, of Forum Communications, which is a multi-state communications company, newspapers all over Minnesota, North Dakota, television stations. That Valley Prosperity Partnership, I visited with the co-chair, the current co-chair of that, because she indicated that they needed more Minnesota participation in this. It's all North Dakota, basically, now. There's very little Minnesota participation. And this group is going to be a driving force for our part of the state, and including Minnesota. And it desperately needs Minnesota participation. And the co-chair of this event, this group, has committed to me to work with me in getting Minnesota more connected. And I'd like to see the university take an active role in that. I think there will be opportunities for research for Minnesota. There will be opportunities for economic development work that the university can be engaged with. And, you know, the university needs to be more present, I think, up in the 7th District. Right? And it's tough because the media and the public is totally focused on NDSU and the University of North Dakota. And we've got other institutions, Minsky institutions, private colleges that are also impacted by that. They're having a struggle, too, competing with that. And so the university is not alone in this. This is true for a lot of us. I hope that...
That is on point. I was looking for perchance some concrete examples of types of research and areas where you would, sitting as a mayor, say, we got to reach to the university for something here.
Well, I think the university needs to be involved in, as I have been for 40 years, in the water issue up our way. There's been some involvement. I think there's a tremendous opportunity for the University of Minnesota to be more engaged with that water issue and the land issue. It's critical. We're a breadbasket for the world up our way. And we've got serious flooding problems, and just as sure as I'm sitting here, we're going to have severe drought again one of these days. And the university, I think, can be very helpful to the whole basin in helping us work through and find solutions to those major water-related issues. So that's a concrete example.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've got six people that want to have a question for you, so we'll probably have to cut it off at that point. So
I'll shorten them up.
Jerry, you're next.
Thank you for your candor about the legislative issues. And as being a resident of Moorhead, I have to say, other than the stadium issue, you're considered Mr. Mayor.
So, thank you. That's an honor.
That's cute.
I want to go back to one of the references you had. Said your greatest strength was your principles and your genuine care for students. And I know you're not an alumni of the University of Minnesota, but you do believe maroon and gold. Those rounded up.
Yes, that's
Concordia
right.
Is also maroon and gold.
That's right.
And I would like you to comment, if you can, about your experience and the many years working in a small private college and how that can translate to a big major research university.
Well, I would start by saying that for us at Concordia, it's all about mission. And we have a mission statement at Concordia that just about everybody associated with the colleges knows it. They can recite it. The purpose of Concordia College is to influence the affairs of the world by sending into society thoughtful and informed men and women dedicated to the Christian life. And getting everybody associated with the university to understand what is the mission of the university, what is the university trying to do in working with students, I think is critical. And mission to me is the main driver to success in accomplishing that mission, in getting the mission lived out through the lives of your graduates. So I think that's very important. The other thing that I think is very important, and this is something that I would have an interest in as a regent, sort of monitoring the whole sense of community. Now, when you've got 52,000 students, obviously it's pretty hard to have the same sense of community that you would have with 2,800 students. I understand that. But you can have smaller communities within the university, and I think it's very important in the student experience for every student to have some sense of community, if it's in their residence hall, in their organizational life, whatever. That's very important, because if students feel connected to the institution and feel a sense of community, even if it's not the whole 52,000 students, but at least some segment of it, they're going to be more satisfied with their experience. They're going to be more likely to contribute and stay active and connected with the university after they graduate. To me, that's the key. Those are keys. And as Chief Student Affairs Officer, I worked very hard trying to maintain a sense of community. That's one of our institution's great strengths. And you know, the ring that so many of us wear is no matter where you go on the face of the earth, you have people saying, "Wow, Concordia, that's where I went to school," or whatever. So I don't know. Those are a few thoughts, Jerry.
Thank you. Thank you. Well done.
Thank you.
Pat.
I'll try to be brief in my question. You intimate knowledge of Concordia, the private colleges.
Yeah.
And by the way, I thought the mission was, or the slogan was, bring a coat. But thank you for correcting my
Yeah, opinion. You bet.
You
bet.
You obviously have great knowledge there. Five blocks away is, I describe it as MSUM.
Yes.
Minsky College.
Yes.
But another four or five blocks away is Moorhead College, or the technical SCC.
They call themselves M-State now.
M-State, okay. Yeah. I stand corrected. And then not very far across the river is NDSU, a great institution and so on. I'm going to say the U of M. On the Minnesota side of the border, how do they fit together, and what are their roles in 30 seconds for a class 7?
Sure. Well, we have Tri-College University, which is very important. The three, MSUM, Concordia, and NDSU, formed a Tri-College University. So they're actually offering courses. They enable students to work across the border. I think it's very important for institutions to have connections and relationships with other institutions. And I know that in some sense the university and Minsky are competitors in some ways, but yet there ought to be things that the university and Minsky are doing together, working together, and the same with the privates. And I think it's important to have those connections. Throughout my career, I've been doing all kinds of things to connect people and organizations on like, similar interests, and I think institutions need to do the same.
Dan. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've had a number of positions where you've been able to view the issue of affordability and tuition as an administrator, as a policymaker. How big of a problem do you see the issue of rising tuition, and how would you approach that as a regent?
Well, good question. That's an important question. I think affordability and access are very important issues that, as a regent, you need to really pay a lot of attention to. We want to make sure that the education is accessible to all who may be able to be successful. And you have to have it affordable. I support the university's request to extend the freeze. I support that. I've heard President Kaler talk about that. I thought he made an excellent case for why that ought to be done. And, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be feasible to do that. But we need to pay attention to tuition and try to keep the tuition as under control as we can. You know, there are other ways to do it, too. You can increase your development work in trying to get scholarship and grants from private sector to support students so that you have that kind of support that's available. Obviously, I've also been involved a lot, both at the college and in the legislature, with the state grant program and making sure that, based on need, that you have those resources available. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you. And my question was in the same realm as the previous question. And first of all, I enjoyed being your partner on the Viking Stadium issue, and so I watched firsthand that you do bring that collaborative style to the
thank
work you.
You
do. So thank you.
Yeah. It was a pleasure working with you.
Thank you. So the cost side of higher education, you know, is getting national attention. Everybody
yes.
is saying that it's, you know, on a trajectory that can't continue,
yeah.
and so much of what our, you know, future companies are saying their workforce needs. They say the way we're educating kids isn't fulfilling the skills that are required. What ideas would you bring to the table, given your experience in higher ed and your other experience? How would you approach the larger problem?
Well, I think we're all concerned about how much money, and you know, more money is always one response, but we also need to take a good hard look at how we're using the resources that we currently have. and I know that President Kaler again has talked about wanting now to every 5 years take a look, is something really doing what they had originally intended, or maybe it needs to be altered or dropped or whatever the case might be. I think that's very important. That's one of the things I did working with the State Government Finance Committee is tying funding to performance. And we need to do a whole lot more of that. And I think what the legislature has challenged the university and the president to try and find cost savings was the right thing to do. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to do. I've been in situations both... both in local government and at the college and in the state of having to make some difficult decisions, difficult choices, and learning how to say no. I mean, I've had to say no a lot in my experience. But if we do our best job at funding those things that are working, that are performing, and trying to reduce costs wherever we can other than that, maybe at that point we still need some additional resources in order to meet the needs. But at least we can look people with a straight face saying, this is what we've done to try and reduce our costs and be more efficient, but we still are short and we're trying to do this. And I think it's very important when you're asking for more money to be rather specific about what it is you need and why. And what it's going to do. So those
thank
are
you.
Good. Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Mr. Chair, Dan and Jerry have already pretty much asked my question, so I'll pass.
Very good. And Bert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maury, just to follow up on Sonia's question about divisiveness, you know, the stadium issue was a prime example
yeah.
of that. You know, in varying degrees, it's Republican versus Democrat. It was rural versus urban, it was the private sector versus the government sector. And for sure, there was a lot of divisiveness, and you as one of the chief authors handle that. Without getting into personalities or names, can you give us 60 seconds on how you wrestled with that divisiveness with all those parties and ultimately came out with the bill?
Patience and perseverance are two of my strong qualities, and I needed a lot of patience and perseverance. And I also felt that a key in this situation was developing good relations with the media. Because the media are telling the story of what's going on, what we're trying to do. And I've been very gratified by having a number of local media folks, well-known names, I won't mention names, who have told me that how impressed they were with the way we handled the media, the way we handled issues, and the divisiveness that was around this, and I think that was a key. If we hadn't been good at in communicating, working with the media, there would have been more divisiveness, and at least we were able to get other sides of the story out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, your interview stimulated a lot of questions. That's positive. Thank you very much, and for your closing statement.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your service. And you know, I didn't have this in my long range plan. And frankly, I really didn't even think about this opportunity until I started getting encouragement from people to consider it. And I thought about it long and hard. But then I got to thinking about how important the university is to the state of Minnesota and how much I care about Minnesota. I'm a Minnesota guy. And I want to see the university be even more successful and be more, even more of a shining light for our state and for our nation. And I see challenges out there that I would like to be a part of. And you know, the two words that the president has used that really appeal to me are bold and ambitious. If there's any two words that maybe characterize my experiences, I've been bold a lot and I've been ambitious. And so I can relate to that and would love to have a chance to serve. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You sure you don't